This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Welcome to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz. Today, we welcome Dr. Melanie Oblender, who is the Director of Palliative Care Services at Covenant Hospital and is someone who caring often for persons who are facing end-of-life circumstances. And David, I was, in our conversation with Dr. Oblender, reminded of an old joke I once heard about an old cowboy. And I think you'll appreciate this because later on in our conversation, you talk about a cowboy show in Gunsmoke. But there was an old cowboy in the Wild West who was a notorious outlaw. It became clear that he was very sick, and they called the doctor in, and the doctor said that there was nothing he could do for him. So they said, well, go run and fetch the preacher. And the preacher came in and asked the man, notorious as he was, are you willing to renounce the devil in all his ways? And the old cowboy outlaw looked up at the preacher and he said, now, wait a minute, preacher, this is no time to be making enemies. But Dr. Oblender talks about the importance of reconciliation and coming to terms not only with one's sickness or disease, but also coming to terms relationally, and the role that a doctor can play in helping to facilitate that's powerful medicine.
It's a good conversation to have because I'm sure many of our listeners have experienced the reality of having someone who is critically ill in their lives. And I know that very often people feel helpless in that situation and they struggle to find the right answers and we grapple. And there's very often so much mystery around when someone gets bad news that they may not get well. And it was great to hear Dr. Oblender. And I just believe that our listeners are going to be able to identify with a lot of what she says, not only from the perspective of her being a medical professional, a physician, but also I think in her own way, her own style, a very spiritual person.
You mentioned that, and one of the most interesting comments that she makes in this interview is she says, and I hate to steal her thunder, but I think it's interesting. She says, I'm not a God person. And yet she's dealing with questions of God all the time and enters into that spirituality and says, I believe that there's something out there. What it is in name, I don't know exactly. But I think that's a wonderful thing.
She said, I'm not a God person, but who's to say? And what is a God person? Sure. By whose definition? I have a remarkable respect for her because, at least from my perspective, she is a God person because she's dealing with very, very sacred things, the human heart and the human body. It doesn't get any more sacred. So she has an awful lot to teach us and to help us to understand not only palliative care, and she's going to discuss and define the parameters of what palliative care is. I think our listeners, again, are going to be very impressed with her. I certainly was.
One of the things I love about this is that we are able to enter into a conversation and recognize that faith matters, whether in life or in death. These are substantive issues that we're wrestling with, that we're spiritual beings, and there's a spirituality to both living and to dying, and that is something that permeates this conversation with someone I would consider to be a very spiritual person, Dr. Melanie Oblender. When we return, this is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, with your hosts Ryan Price and David Cruz, brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, and we are here today with Dr. Melanie Oblender, the Covenant Director of Palliative Care Services at Covenant Hospital, and we welcome you today to our studio. Very glad to have you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Doctor. So good to have you with us, and we've looked forward to this conversation because the nature of what you do touches so many lives. All of us depend on good caregivers of the sick. And then if we've ever had the experience ourselves of having an illness or having the illness of someone in our lives close to us, we know that we all look for healing. And so, Ryan, it's a good thing.
Absolutely. I would say about Dr. Oblender, We've, in my own congregation, had many people come now through palliative care and have been the recipients, and they call you Dr. O, which I think speaks to their sense of comfort with you and all the care providers there.
Tell us a little bit about why you chose medicine as a career and what sustains you now in the work that you do.
You know, I got started in medicine in a totally roundabout way. I went to nursing school first, and I was a psych nurse in San Francisco, and I loved it. For some reason, I guess because I was young, I got itchy feet, joined the Air Force as a nurse. And while I was in the Air Force, I really went to get the GI Bill so I could get, I wanted a PhD in nursing. But while I was there, somehow I got derailed. Some would say I had a nervous breakdown, or some would say I've served a greater calling, but I decided to go to medical school. So my GI Bill worked out very nicely for me because it did put me through medical school. When I got done with medical school, I knew that I wanted to be a pediatrician. I wanted to work with really sick kids, mostly because, you know, well, kids, it's not that I didn't love them and enjoy them, but there was something about dealing with very ill kids that was more appealing. I did a residency in pediatrics and then went on and did a fellowship in pediatric hematology oncology, which is where kids are really sick. And that's how I got to Lubbock.
Any particular person in the medical field that was an inspiration at that point in your life?
I would say probably the woman that was the most influential for me was the director of pediatric hematology oncology. She was very no-nonsense, very gentle spoken, very calm. I think maybe that's why we work so well together, because I tend to ping off walls. I've got a lot of things I want to get done. But we did work well together. But I wanted to grow up to be like her. Even though I was a grown-up when I started medical school, I really wanted to be like her.
You talk about wanting to be like a doctor. That brings to mind the question, what makes a good doc? And what are you setting out to do to be a good doctor in palliative care? And I may even back up and say, what exactly is palliative care? I think a lot of people are familiar maybe with hospice. But how do you go about your work with the palliative care? And then what makes one good at it?
Well, first of all, to answer the question about what palliative medicine is. It's the newest field in medicine, so it doesn't surprise me that many people aren't aware of who we are. I'll just describe to you what our role is at Covenant, and other palliative medicine docs may do things a whole lot differently. But as you know, there's a lot of people in our area that have chronic diseases, diseases that we're not going to cure. Heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, diabetes, all of those. And they can have some very significant symptoms with them. A lot of pain, shortness of breath. And our goal isn't to go in and figure out how to cure this, but how to relieve that symptom. So if it's shortness of breath, what can we do? And for pain, cancer pain or heart pain, we can do the same things. The other thing that I think sets us apart from our other medical colleagues is, like I said before, they look at the patient. That's their patient. For us, it's the entire unit of care, the patient's family, their daughters, their sons, their wives, their ex-wives even. All of those people are going through this experience of coming to realize that this disease isn't going to be cured. There isn't an operation or a pill that's going to cure it. And it takes a big toll on families and caregivers. So we're there for them as well. The other thing is for some reason in the United States, dead is a very special four-letter word. And we don't want to think about it. We don't want to deal with it. We don't put into effect any sort of mechanisms on what if. And so we get called into intensive care units a lot where things are not going well. And the question has to be asked, what would this person want? And so we take it from there. I mean, we have some special ways of getting to know the patient in the bed, not the person with the tube, but the patient, the person in the bed. And that helps everybody make some very wise and caring decisions about their loved one.
It seems to me like one of the challenges of your discipline would be to get someone or bring someone to a degree of acceptance without it seeming like accepting palliative care is somehow resigning myself to hopelessness. Well, I'm not going to get well. Or that person that I love so much is not going to get well. Am I giving up hope? Am I somehow choosing despair? I know that's not the case. How do you get or bring someone along so that they're more accepting that this is a reality that they may have to accept?
One of our philosophies is it's all about living. And so we can, yeah, you're dying of cancer and we expect death sometime within the next few months, but none of us know when. And in the meantime, there's a lot of living out there. There's a lot of people that you need to make contact with. There's people that you need to see and people you need to talk to. And because we're pretty much an upbeat group, you know, we always go as a pack and we're pretty upbeat, find a lot of things to laugh about with the patients. Sometimes we don't laugh so much, but we try and enjoy them and ourselves. And I think they kind of pick that up. And sometimes we have to say, you know, there are times when you have your hope all going this way. And then gradually it's not going to happen. And it doesn't have to be a bad thing. And your hope changes. So no one is to give up hope, but you need to refocus where you are.
You're talking about end-of-life decisions, and it seems to me that you're pointing, when I think of end-of-life decisions, I generally think of whether to essentially give up one's spirit and stop fighting the inevitable or to go on fighting. But you're implying that there are more decisions to be made than just that. It's a whole sense of coming to terms not only with one's disease, but coming to terms with relationships, with people. And when you're talking about ex-wives, if you're doctoring ex-wives, you're a good doc.
Well, you know, we do have that happen frequently. And I think that speaks to the human spirit. They had a very close relationship once, and for whatever reason, it fell apart. But there are still links to that person that will always be there. And so in a time of need, it doesn't surprise me that ex-wives and ex-husbands are there. A lot of times because they have children, and you can divorce the guy, but he's still the father of your children. Sure. They're going through this, and any mother, I think, would want to put her arms around her kids and go through it as well.
When we return, I want to ask Dr. O about Gunsmoke and Doc Adams. He was a character that it always appealed to me because he was kind of the heart of the healing of Gunsmoke in the culture of such great kind of violence. People might remember that show. It aired many years ago on television. And I want to ask her take on Doc Adams when we come back.
I can't wait, especially being someone who has an autographed picture of Festus Hagen on my wall. I'm excited to hear what you might have to say about that. You're listening to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price and David Cruz. We'll be right back with Dr. Melanie Oldblender.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, and we are sitting here with Dr. Melanie Oblender, Covenant Hospital's Director of Palliative Care. David was talking before the break about a question that comes all the way back from a show I watched in reruns as a child, Gunsmoke, and the doctor on that show.
Yeah, that was a great show. And there was a character on the show that was the doc of the town. And he was really the person that had the source of wisdom and healing for that community. Over time, medicine has changed since the days of Doc Adams. But one thing that hasn't changed is the need for good physicians that are patient-centered, people that really enter into the life of the patient in a caring, gentle, healing, loving way. And I think that's so important. Doctor, your take on that?
Well, medicine has changed quite a bit. I think that most of us who went into medicine did it for all the reasons you've mentioned, being part of someone's lives, either providing the cure or helping them in some way. I think we kind of get that beat out of us in medical school, and a lot of docs coming out, I think, maybe a little uncomfortable with being there in the moment with patients. I think that's one of the advantages of palliative medicine, because whereas we do a lot of things to people, as we shift our gears in the way we're looking at life and living, we need to start doing less to them and more for them. And that's what we try and focus on in palliative medicine. It doesn't matter to me that this is a very rare exotic tumor that's only been seen in 3 people in the United States. What matters to me is what the tumor is doing to the patient and what the tumor is doing to the family, even if it's not the tumor actually doing it, but how they're responding to it, how they cope with it. And, you know, this isn't like a big stretch for me, because that's a lot of what I used to do in taking care of kids with cancer. My basic philosophy was that kids with cancer, if we are curing them, we are expecting them to join as a productive member of society. And so I needed to counsel families. You know, it's real easy to say, oh, he's sick, let it alone. But no, don't let it alone. And people have to be accountable. If PD oncologists need to focus on things like kids' education and how they're doing in school and what sorts of after school activities and who's their pet cat anyway and what's their name, I can probably tell you most of the kids' pets' names. I wouldn't recognize some of the moms, but I know the pets' names.
I once heard Sherwin Nuland, who is a person who wrote, I think, a National Book Award book on how we die, famous neuroscientist at Yale, but has given a lot of reflection on the ways in which people die. And he diagnosed kind of the step-by-step stages of something like Alzheimer and AIDS and various forms of cancer. But I heard an interview once where he was asked, what is the worst way to die? He said, absolutely, the worst way to die is always alone. And it seems like that's what you're sort of implying. It doesn't matter what the particular disease may be, but there is some sense in which this person, not solely a patient, needs that human touch, that sense of still being a part of a community.
Well, I believe that. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the hospitals, 2 of the hospitals at least here in town, have a program called No One Dies Alone. These are just volunteers. They take an hour off of work or 2 hours, come up and sit with the person. It's interesting that he should say that, because I think that there is alone and then there is alone. And I'm not sure that the presence of another human being can keep you from that sense of isolation. That would be much harder to get through to than the guy that's just in the room by himself.
Is faith a help or is it a hindrance in helping someone journey and transition into, well, I call it the life to come? Someone else might have an entirely different perspective. But is it a help or is it a hindrance?
Well, I guess it could be a help. I'm not a real God person, but as I have watched people, I see that they get a lot of strength from their faith. And I am willing, because I believe that there is a God. I don't know particularly what to call him or her, but I believe that there is some divine being up there. And however my patients decide to manifest their faith, whether it's to pray to Allah or to Jesus or however, I believe there's probably only one up there, and I guess he won't care what we call him. So I can get into the faith and what your belief system is, because really I think that there is something good there. And I have to say that since I've been doing this work, that I believe that there is something good beyond what I know in some other realm. I can't define it. And sometimes people will ask me, well, how come it's taking so long? I don't know. You know, but I think that there's some negotiation between God and a patient. I don't know what it's about. They're going to do it in their own time. And we have to let go of that mentality that this has got to happen on a time frame. Once I said, maybe you got to take a number. I don't know. You need to let go of the time frames, because it doesn't matter. And it's going to happen. It will be the right time. And hopefully we've gotten a few people through that thinking, well, they said once the ventilator was off, my dad was going to die.
It can be agonizing for a family member to sit by and expect imminent death and then wait in vigil for hours and sometimes days.
It is. And I think part of it is that everybody's busy and we need to parcel out our time. This is the time for working. This is the time to go be with Dad because he's dying. And that time is running over its expected frame. And I don't mean that in the sense that they're ready for him to get gone. But he probably at this point isn't talking to them, and they're pretty well looking at someone who really isn't there anymore. I would be very curious as to how they do this in Europe, but the Americans seem to run on a real time schedule, and everything's got to be in its place at that time.
You see a lot of suffering, obviously. Is any suffering valuable to us as human beings that ultimately brings about some good?
Certainly, I think that people grow with a certain amount of suffering. I think that suffering can be overdone to the point that you lose yourself. And I'm thinking of children who are emotionally abused, for example. They suffer, but they suffer to the point and to the degree and for the length of time that they no longer can meet their full potential as human beings. I think suffering for people who are in their last days of life doesn't really, we don't have to have pain in order to make it to heaven, I don't think. And I think that I'm here to stop that. I think that there can be a lot of suffering just as you reflect on your life. You know, even if you've lived 90 years, there's always probably something in the bucket list that didn't get done, or an I'm sorry that didn't get said. As you reflect back, I think there's some suffering in that. Hopefully, it weighs itself out with the joy and the good that you've done.
David's question reminds me of Christian scriptures where Jesus' last hours, there's kind of two witnesses. One says, seems to go to great length to say Jesus carried his cross and carried his cross alone. And then there's this other witness within scripture that says there was another man who was called in. His name was Simon of Cyrene to help him carry his cross. And in some ways, I can recognize the value of suffering to some degree, David. But on another level, I have to think to myself, you know, some suffering is just simply not redemptive. I would imagine as a doctor or even as a pastor, I would counsel someone who was under your care to let go of the sense that they have to just grit and bear it, as my grandfather would say, and release, that it's okay, that God's not going to be mad if we take pain medication or alleviate someone's suffering or a loved one's suffering. Comfort is a ministry.
I would agree. I think that behind that there needs to be, anybody can come in and pump you full of morphine. There's got to be more to it than that. And I think just giving pain medicine is not going to take away that they're doing something to me and not for me. I think the biggest thing that we can do as a nurse, as a physician, is to be there. And it doesn't have to be all day. To listen to tears without reproaching them or trying to dry them.
Or even judging them, right?
Judging, yeah.
Let me ask this of you. What gives you joy in the midst of what you do? What keeps you motivated?
Well, I think there are several things. Number one, you know, when I was doing PD oncology and we would take a kid with leukemia and give him chemotherapy, and in 1 week we saw no signs of leukemia in his bone marrow again. That's sort of a yes. It is that way when I hear about people who have been in excruciating pain, and we go in and we sit down with a syringe of a drug and give a little bit and did that work and find the right dose for them and say, okay, there we are. And they sleep that night. And that's as big a thrill as putting someone into remission in a week for me. So that gives me joy, a sense of accomplishment. The people that I work with bring me a lot of joy because I watch them kind of change the face of medicine by being there and supporting me. If I am really upset about, I mean, every now and again, a death will just kick you where you never thought it would, and they're there for me. They've got my back, and I've got theirs. Those are some of the things. And then I have a bunch of dogs that either drive me nuts or bring me joy. Depends on the time of day.
Dr. Oblender, we give you thanks. I thank you on behalf of this community for listening to Tears. You've been listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts with your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz. Brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, and we are here with Dr. Melanie Oblender. Dr. Oblender, you were telling us about the difference between palliative care and hospice care, and then that sort of took you into a conversation that we had off the air about a particular patient, and I would like for you to retell our audience that story.
We were called in to care for or talk to the family of a young guy who'd been in a really bad motor vehicle accident, broke most of his bones, to the point where diagnostic tests were really not able to be done because of all the broken bones. As time went on, they realized that this guy was not responding neurologically the way they thought he should, but with all the metal and stuff in his body, they couldn't exactly take him down and do an MRI on him. The family finally decided to bring him up to the palliative medicine unit, and he had a trach and a feeding tube placed in his stomach. We would go in every day and talk to him, and then all of a sudden, things just weren't clicking for me, for a guy who was declining. He kind of seemed to know me and would follow me around the room. There was a couple of nurses that he really, really liked. They gave him a really bad time, and I thought, you know, they're picking on him, and he's laughing. And he was laughing at them. Well, he wasn't going to die soon. And as long as he was there, the hope was that we would get him a little better. We started working really hard, got the neurologist back, and they said, yeah, there's more to this boy than we had, you know, once believed. And we finally got him to a brain rehab center in Denver, Colorado. And he came back to see us. He was walking and talking. It was great. It's my job as a physician there to get people and allow them to be the most that they can be.
The line between life and death must be a tremendous mystery for someone in your profession.
I don't know that I've ever thought of it as a mystery. It just is. We talk to people about dying. You know, I always equate it to the rainbow. You know, we all know that there are five colors in a rainbow. And when you're looking at it, if someone said, you draw a line between that color and the other color, none of us could do that because it's a blending.
Yes.
So I always think of people kind of floating through rainbows. Sometimes they're closer, more of the primary color. Other times they're getting a little bit on the fuzzy side until pretty soon they're beyond it and through.
Dr. Oblender, I give you thanks for your work. What a wonderful image of going over the rainbow to that place, that mystery, as David said, that life to come. You've been listening to Faith Matters on Lubbock's Voice of the Arts 89.1.